So welcome, everyone, and thank you for joining us today for this call on the ICCPR, engaging with the ICCPR review, who, what, when, where, and why. So on the call, we've had over 100 people register for this webinar. Groups range from small group grassroots organizations to large civil liberties and human rights groups to academic institutions, as well as several people who are participating in their own individual capacity. We also have a wide representation. Each region of the country is represented here as well. So this webinar is part of the U.S. Human Rights Network's education and training program. As part of its programming, the network's coordinating center offers ongoing national, regional, in-person, web-based, and teleconference workshops that target specific issues for in-depth exploration and education. Our collective mission is to build and advance a people-centered domestic human rights movement. We serve both organizations and individuals in this effort. One of the ways we carry out our mission is by connecting non-governmental organizations and social justice groups, especially those at the grassroots level, to United Nations mechanisms or processes connected to the three treaties the U.S. government has ratified, including our focus today, which is the Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, otherwise known as the ICCPR. The other treaties that the U.S. has ratified are the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination, known as CERD, or the Race Treaty, and the Convention Against Torture, known as CAT. One of the ways we coordinate groups and interested individuals is through the creation of a network task force, which is comprised of our members and partners. The ICCPR task force has 12 members, of which two are co-chairs and who will be speaking later on in the program. The network also coordinated universal periodic process in 2000, review process in 2010. If you participate in that process or any of the other treaty processes, we encourage you to make a conscious effort to connect those efforts to the ICCPR process. Our hope is that one can be used to strengthen the other. And just as a reminder, I want to let you know that this call is being recorded, so if you need to step off, we'll provide it for you later on. So what is the ICCPR? The ICCPR is a key international human rights treaty, and it provides a range of protections for civil and political rights, including the right to life, to practice one's religion, found a family, as well as gender equity, freedom of speech, and more. As previously mentioned, the ICCPR is also one of the few core human rights treaties that the U.S. has ratified and is therefore obliged to respect and protect the rights enumerated in the treaty. Importantly, the ICCPR requires governments to provide adequate remedy where these rights have been violated and to legislate where the laws are lacking. The Human Rights Committee, which you will hear about from our presenter today, is the monitoring body for the ICCPR. It's composed of independent experts from across the world who review periodic reports from the countries that have ratified it. The committee relies in part on factual, on-the-ground information analysis provided by you, NGOs, and social justice groups to supplement information submitted by the U.S. government in its report. NGOs not only play a key role in providing on-the-ground information on how the U.S. is complying with its obligations under the ICCPR, but are also key to actual implementation of the treaty. So why is this process important? The ICCPR and other treaties that the U.S. has ratified are important tools that human rights, social justice, and grassroots groups can use to raise awareness about their issues and to push for higher standards of accountability from the U.S. government. The Obama administration and previous administrations care about their reputation in the international human rights arena. The U.S. holds itself as having the moral authority to police the rest of the world, and as such, we should demand that it lives up to the ideals for groups at home. We, non-governmental organizations and social justice groups, strengthen our cause and effectiveness when we speak together. Importantly, engagement with UN mechanisms such as the Human Rights Committee has been an important organizing tool for groups. Doing so gives your organization opportunities to collaborate with other organizations on your specific issue or issues. This type of collaboration has the effect of enlarging your capacity to do this work and increases your potential to be heard or recognized. Essentially, it provides a global platform for your issues. So on today's call, we'll be discussing how best groups can engage the ICCPR process, and we're honored to have Patrick Munzenberg, join us for this important conversation. Patrick holds a PhD in human rights at the Law Faculty of the University of Grenoble in France. He's currently the director of the Center for Civil and Political Rights, an NGO facilitating the participation of civil rights of civil society in the work of the Human Rights Committee and providing technical and legal support at all stages of the reporting process. Patrick Munzenberg is also judge at the Criminal Tribunal in Geneva. And Patrick will be talking to us about the Human Rights Committee and how you as social justice groups and NGO organizations can get involved in this process. So, Patrick.
Hello. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm very pleased to be with you today. I will focus my presentation on a brief overview of the Human Rights Committee and the ICCPR, and also the ways the NGOs and the civil society may interact with the Human Rights Committee for this very important event that NGOs from your country will have next year with regards to the review of the report on the USA. I will maybe start with the PowerPoint. Just to give you a brief overview of the different treaty bodies and also the context of the treaty bodies. The first slide that I would like to share with you is it was already mentioned earlier, to give an overview of the different treaties with regard to human rights at the UN level and also the monitoring bodies in charge to ensure that those treaties are effectively implemented at the national level. So the Human Rights Committee is one of those bodies and is the one of the oldest treaty body actually monitoring the implementation of the ICCPR, which is the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. There is a second very important covenant, which is the International Covenant on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights, which was adopted in 1966, and the Committee on the Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights monitors this covenant. The very first, the oldest one actually, treaty body is the Committee on the Elimination of the Racial Discrimination, CERD, in charge of monitoring the International Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination, adopted in 1965. More recently, the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women was adopted in 1979, and the CEDAW Committee, the Committee on the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women, is in charge of this body. Of this treaty, sorry. More recently, again, the Convention Against Torture and all other cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatment was adopted in 1984, and the Committee Against Torture is the monitoring body for this convention. In addition, there is a second subcommittee on prevention of torture, which monitors the implementation of the optional protocol of this convention against torture. The Convention on the Rights of the Child is monitored by the Committee on the Rights of the Child, the CRC. And then the Convention on the Protection of the Rights of All Migrant Workers and Members of Their Families is monitored by the Committee of the Migrant Workers, CMW. Finally, there are two recent conventions that were adopted recently. The Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities in 2006, and there is also a monitoring body, the Committee on the Rights of the Person with Disabilities, CRPD, and even more recently, the International Convention of the Protection of All Persons from Unforced Disappearances was adopted in 2006 also, and there is also a specific committee, the Committee on Unforced Disappearances. So this, those bodies are in charge of ensuring that, all the provisions of the treaties are effectively implemented. And the Human Rights Committee is one of those different bodies. But again, it's very important at, already at this stage to keep in mind that the review that the U.S. Will have next year is one of the different review with regard to the treaty, to the Human Rights Treaties, as long, of course, as the states has ratified the relevant treaties. The next slide will give you an overview of the main treaty bodies' functions. The very first and the most important functions for each treaty body is to ensure that state reports are regularly submitted and are considered by the treaty bodies. This means that the state report, and we will discuss that more later in the second part of the presentation, will be reviewed by those members of the committee, and based on these state reports, the committee will adopt recommendations to improve the implementation of the treaties. The cornerstone of this approach is a dialogue with the state party. So this is not a court. The committee is not a court. It's only a legal body that is supposed to monitor the implementation, but is not able, of course, to take some binding decisions based on the state reports. The second function of the treaty bodies is the possibility for some of the treaty bodies, not all, to consider individual complaints when there is a violation of the one of the provisions of the treaty, as long as the relevant state accepted or recognized the authority of this treaty to consider individual complaints. And this is not the case for many states, and this is also not the case for all the treaties. But the Human Rights Committee, for instance, is competent to, under the optional protocol, to review some cases on the day complaints. The third function of the treaty bodies is the possibility for the for them to adopt general comments, which are usually seen as another authoritative way to interpret the provisions of the treaties. Some very important general comments have been adopted by the various treaty bodies, and they again give an overview of the interpretation also on the scope of the relevant provisions of the relevant treaty. And finally, few of the treaty bodies have the possibility to conduct inquiries based on allegation of important or massive human rights violation. This is also extremely limited, and it's more kind of it's more a theoretical possibility than a concrete one, since almost no inquiries have been conducted so far by the treaty bodies. I will now move to the next slide, which will give you a brief, very brief overview of the different characteristics of each treaty bodies. I have to say first that most of the treaty bodies have the same characteristics, so what I will say now is valid for most of the treaty bodies. First, they are independent members. This means that they do not represent any state. Of course, they are elected by state party during the state party meetings and the elections, but once they are elected, they are not supposed to represent their own countries. They are supposed to be independent. And that's one of the main, if not the most important, difference between the treaty bodies and the Human Rights Council, which is a state-based body. Here you have really independent members who are supposed to act independently. As I said, they are elected by the state parties, and usually the term is 4 years. Although this can be renewed, and some of the committee members, for instance, for the Human Rights Committee, are in the committee since more than 20 years. I think the oldest one is since 1987. The meetings are usually held in Geneva or in New York for the Human Rights Committee, but also for the other treaty bodies. And most of the treaty bodies have their meetings in Geneva. Only the CEDAW and the Human Rights Committee have one meeting per year in New York. And next year, and that's very unfortunate for the review of the U.S. report, next year the meeting will be held in Geneva as well. So there will be no meeting in New York mainly for budgetary reasons and finance constraints from the UN. It's important to note also that the meetings are held in public session. And when I say public, it's a real public meeting, meaning that you don't need to have the ECOSOC statutes or the UN-specific statutes to get access to the meetings. So that's one of the main difference between the Human Rights Council and the treaty bodies, where in the Human Rights Council you are supposed to get the ECOSOC status to get access and to assist to the meetings. And the treaty bodies, everyone, every NGO, every civil society organizations, every journalist, everyone can actually have access. Even if you are not part of any group, you can come and make sure you and you can come and assist to the session. Now, since last year, the meetings are also webcast by the NGOs, and it's accessible online, live. So if you cannot attend the meeting physically in Geneva, you can also follow the meetings on the webcast. The working methods and the rules of procedure are the two main document that rules the work of the treaty bodies and the Human Rights Committee, and of course it's important to note that a very important work is done not only by the members themselves but with the very important support of the Secretariat of the OHCHR, which means the High Commissioner for Human Rights of the UN. So there is a secretary of the committee who belongs to the OHCHR, to the UN, and is in charge to organizing all the different aspects of the work of the committees. I will now move to the next slide and focus more concretely on how the NGOs could actually work closely with the Human Rights Committee and the experts. The first thing to note is that there is an obligation to submit a report. So the starting point, and now it's where we are U.S. report. There is an initial report, or in the U.S. case, a periodic report that was submitted to the committee, and that's the starting point. And it's also important to note that you see on this slide that there is several submission. And this means that the review that will take place next October is not starting from scratch or from something completely new. This report is based on the previous cycle, is based on previous report, and is based on previous recommendations. And already now, I think it's very important to keep in mind that all the work you will do need to be connected to the previous cycle. What the experts need to know, what we need to know is, is there any progress? What are the progress that the U.S. did, and what are the difficulties, challenge, or regressions that need to be also mentioned? But it's very important to make sure that you have a connection between the current review and the previous one. Now, for each cycle, there is several key steps that are very important to keep in mind, and that are very important to have a clear overview. Because for each step of the cycle, there is an entry point and a specific role and specific task for the NGOs, civil society. The starting point, as I said before, is the submission of the state report. This is done now already since the government submitted its report last year in December 2011. Now the next step is the drafting and adoption of the list of issues. The list of issues is a very important document that contains the main issues that the committee would like to discuss with the government during the review. So that will be, in a way, the skeleton or the outline of the discussions or the dialogue between the committee and the delegations. And it's very important to make sure that the list of issues reflect also the concern of the NGOs and civil society. Then once we get the list of issues adopted, and for the case of the USA, it will be in March next year and during the 107 session in Geneva. Once we get the list of issues adopted, the list of issues will be translated and then made public, usually between 1 or 2 months after the adoption, so it will be roughly around May 2013. The state is supposed to reply to those list of issues for the review. This is not mandatory, but it's a practice of the committee, and I would say that 80% of the states actually comply with this request from the Human Rights Committee. The replies are usually a very technical document which is actually supposed to give additional information on the issues raised by the committee. Of course, the NGOs can also reply to those list of issues. We will see in another slide what are the exactly entry points for this aspect of work. Then we have the consideration of the state report, the dialogue between the delegation and the committee. And so far, the review for US is scheduled next October for the 109 session. And this dialogue will take place during 2 days. Usually it does not last more than 6 hours, plus 1 hour or 45 minutes meeting with the NGOs. At the end of the dialogue, there will be a series of recommendations, concluding observations, that are the main concern, that reflects the main concern of the committee. And then finally, and maybe most importantly, the follow-up to the concluding observations, which is the last part, but usually the part that everyone forgets, and which is, to my view, the most important part, because then you really need the NGOs to be involved in this follow-up and to urge the state to actually take actions based on those recommendations. And I think this document, it's an incredible tool for the NGOs to move their own agenda and to make sure some progress can happen actually at the national level. So that's the different steps. And of course, once you end up with the follow-up of the observations, there is a new cycle will restart with a new report and so on. So it's a really an ongoing process. And during the different cycle, there is always work to be done in terms of engagement with the treaty bodies. Now the next slide will. This is the second part. We'll focus more on how we will the NGOs could actually interact with the committee, and I will primarily focus on the list of issues since now it's the next key time for the NGOs from USA. This is first an overview of when the NGOs could actually participate to the process. There is the very first one, and I don't want to stay too long on that because it's already passed now, when the NGOs could actually participate to the draft of the state report. Then there is a second time when the NGOs should actually submit information for the list of issues. Then there is a third time where the NGOs could forward information to the committee based on the list of issues. So once you have this list of issues, I will tell you more on that later. It's also very important to reply and to give information on the list of issues. And finally, the last key moment for the interaction with the committee is during the review itself with the lobby activities. Now, in terms of drafting the report, the participation to the state report, I heard that there are some meetings that were held, but if I understood well, after that the U.S. actually submitted its report, which is good. I don't know how far it was also the case before the drafting of the report, but we have some cases where the NGOs are invited to participate to the state report. I'm always a bit cautious about this because in terms of independence and participation, there are some bad examples actually where NGOs submit information, where participate to the process, and at the end their views were not reflected at all in the final state report. So I prefer to move, especially for this situation, to the next stage, which is where we stand now for the USA, preparation of the NGO before the list of issues. And then I will maybe stay a bit longer on this slide, since it's really your situation now. The timeline is extremely important. There is a very useful document that was done by the organizers of this conference, where you actually see the different deadlines. And the deadline for the list of issues is very important. Keeping in mind that the list of issues will be adopted in March next year during the session, it's important to note that the draft of the list of issues will actually be done by the Secretary of the OECHR in January to have enough time then to go to the translation and to be discussed during the next session of March. So in January, the OECHR, the Secretariat, will start to draft the list of issues. Now, it's important that before I will start to draft this list of issues, NGOs could actually submit information to the OECHR, and this is why the deadline of December 2028 this year seems to be a good option. Although it's even better to maybe receive in advance some early drafts, because due to the amount of documentation provided, I think the OECHR Secretariat will probably start to have a first basic draft probably during the course of December. But at least it should, anything that is related to the list of issues should be submitted to the OECHR, even in the unedited version by the end of this year. So by December, end of December this year. It's important to note that the list of issues, as a matter of practice of the committee, has never more than 25, 30 issues, with some very few exceptions on difficult countries where we have more than that, more questions like Iran. There were like 35 questions, if I remember well. USA, there might be more questions due to the amount of documentation that may reach to the committee, but usually there are no more than 25 questions. So it's also important for you in terms of strategies as a coalition to make sure you cover all the issues, but also to make sure you have a kind of balanced approach of the provisions of the ICCPR, and not focus on one or two or three provisions, but kind of give information on an overview of the different provisions. And also, it's extremely important to focus on the previous recommendations. We need to know what happened to those recommendations, where there are improvements, where there are no improvements, and what is the current status of those recommendations. To see if those recommendations are still valid, if they need to be readdressed to the state, or if there are some that are not valid anymore, either because the situation changed or because the state actually improved the situation. So that's very important. And the Center for Civil and Political Rights, and together with the Human Rights Committee, we developed an interesting grading system with different grades to assess the implementation, the grade A, B, C, and D, and subgrade. and I can tell you more on that later, to assess the level of implementation. And I think it would be extremely useful to follow this approach to help the committee to see what are the key issues that need to be addressed again in the list of issues. That's one point. The second point, which is also very important, is the fact that there may have some new developments in the country, and with regard to that, it's important to note that that those developments need to be reflected also in the list of issues. So that's very important, and that's something that need to be mentioned. So that's also something I would like to remind to those who would prepare the list of issues. Sorry, excuse me. Then the last thing that I would like also to raise with regard to the list of issues is the importance to work as a coalition. I understand that there will be probably many different reports on different issues covered by the different provision of the ICPR, but at one point it's I think your effort to work as a coalition is very important to give an overview of the different issues which are actually covering all the issues. So the committee will always welcome some thematic reports, but at one point it's good to ensure that there is a full coverage of the different issues of the ICCPR provisions. That's the key idea I wanted to share with you with regard to this NGO report. And of course, I can speak more on that if you have more questions. I'm happy to reply to some questions. Maybe very briefly, because I think the time is going now very time to be short. A few minutes to also insist on two or three points. The importance, I guess we will have another meeting like that later, but the importance for the NGOs to reply to the list of issues. It's really important once we have those list of issues that the coalition as a group focus on those list of on those issues. At this stage, it will be too late to provide a full report on the ICCPR implementation, but really to focus on those list of issues. And again, it does not need to be very long, but I would say two or three page per questions would be more than enough. So it would be a kind of already a 50, 60 page document, but to reply to those list of issues. And even more importantly, it's not only to reply from the NGO perspective, but at the very last minute when you will receive the written replies from the government to also comment on those replies, because the committee will be really then in a very good position to assess the information of the government based also on the NGO's views. Finally, during the report itself, the conclusion of the report itself, we probably will also discuss that later in another meeting, but there is some very important and interesting interaction possible with the committee. We managed now to have a formal briefing where there is 30 to 40 minutes devoted for each country under review. So you assist the formal session and you are part of the session in a closed meeting where NGO can actually address the committee. But it's only maximum 30, 40 minutes, so it's extremely short. So a good coordination in advance is very important. And on top of that, we also have informal briefing where committee member can actually ask for more questions and clarification on those questions. Finally, the very last slide that I would like to share with you, and it's really important, is the media awareness. I think at one point I think the media awareness is not only important during the review itself, and it's very important, of course, to issue press release during the review and have a strong media strategy, but also at the very early stage. Once we will get the list of issues adopted in March, it will be also important already now at this stage to raise awareness and to ensure that the media are aware about the main concern of the committee, because this would be a very good indication on the of the main concerns, and if those concerns are the same than the NGOs, then it's also a very good a tool for the NGOs to ensure that your issue came up on the front of the media attraction. At the end of the session, there are also some strategies to develop the media awareness, especially during the follow-up stage, but that also, again, I suggest I speak later. I think my time is off, so I suggest I stop here. Thank you.
Thank you for that very important set of information, Patrick. For those who've just joined the call, thank you. So far, we have over 70 people on the call right now, and sort of more joining us as we continue. We're halfway through the webinar, and we will be taking questions based on Patrick's presentation and others that you may have. But we will hear briefly from Sarah Pauletti, who is a member of the ICCPR Task Force, and then once Sarah speaks, we will take questions. If you would like to ask a question, we ask that you press star 1 to raise your hand, and then at the end of Sarah speaking, you will be recognized to ask your question. Another important announcement is the timeline that Patrick referenced in his presentation. We will put it up as Sarah speaks and then make reference to it. This is also available on our ICCPR web resource page, as well as Patrick's presentation. So now from Sarah. Sarah is a practice associate professor at the University of Pennsylvania Law School, where she founded and directs the Transnational Legal Clinic, which is the law school's international human rights law clinic. She is the co-chair of the U.S. Human Rights Network's ICCPR Task Force and formerly served as a senior coordinator for the U.S. Human Rights Network Universal Periodic Review Project. Her research and advocacy has focused primarily on the intersection of labor rights, migrant rights, and human rights. Sarah?
Great. Thank you. I want to just start by thanking Patrick for joining us from Geneva and providing us with this overview. It's incredibly helpful to have it and to have it from the perspective of somebody who is there in Geneva, witnessing the process as it transpires on a regular basis.
Sorry, Sarah, could you speak a little louder, please?
Sure. Since the process has changed a little bit since the last review that the U.S. went through. I also want to thank the U.S. Human Rights Network's coordinating staff, and especially Yolanda, who recently joined as the National Education Coordinator and in a matter of weeks was able to help us pull this together. Together with my fellow task force members. And I want to thank all of you who are participating and who have given your time to this initiative. As Yolanda mentioned, I wanted to just provide a little bit of context and some of the next steps for the ICCPR review for the United States as it fits within the ongoing human rights advocacy before the different UN mechanisms that the network has been engaged in and continues to be engaged in. Many of you may know that the U.S. Human Rights Network has set up an International Mechanisms Coordinating Committee, which is aimed at ensuring that our advocacy before the UN bodies and then the advocacy that we're doing here in the United States has some continuity, that we can continue to benefit and build on the work that's been undertaken already, and so that we can ensure collaboration and coordination moving forward as we look ahead towards what we anticipate being the upcoming review under the Convention on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination, as well as the upcoming review under the Convention Against Torture. And obviously all of this hopefully builds on the advocacy and the coordinating work that the network has done for the past review processes, including the most recent Universal Periodic Review process. The ICCPR Task Force has developed a set of goals and priorities to help in us setting forth our efforts in this coordination role. And similar to our efforts with the U.S. Universal Periodic Review process, those goals include promoting U.S. compliance, broadening public education and grassroots engagement to build a national human rights consciousness, in this case specific to the rights contained within the ICCPR, to strengthen the mechanisms within the United States for implementation at both the national, state, and local level, and to advance the human rights dialogue at all levels of government, state and federal and local, and to improve the engagement of those levels of government with civil society and on issues of human rights. As Yolande mentioned, we have put several materials on the U.S. Human Rights Network's website, and that link was sent out earlier, and hopefully that will help provide some of the background information on the ICCPR as well as the reports that were submitted in the past, which will be helpful in seeing the kinds of issues that have been raised, as well as the U.S. report, and the network is currently working on a summary of the U.S. report, as that was a 300-page long report, and we realize that not everybody has the time or the energy to read through the entire report, but hopefully you will look at those documents carefully, and we hope that they'll be of help to all of you as we move forward. The timeline itself, as Patrick mentioned, the U.S. did submit its report. It's its fourth periodic report to the U.N. Human Rights Committee. They submitted that report on December 30th of 2011. They then announced, with not a lot of notice, a January 10th consultation on the ICCPR, which was held in Washington, D.C., and at that meeting was the representation from the Office of Legal Advisor within the State Department, as well as the Bureau of Human Rights, Democracy, and Labor, and several of the federal agencies who ultimately have the jurisdiction over the rights at issue in the report. Network, the ACLU, Columbia Human Rights Institute, the Washington College of Law, my clinic, and the Ford Foundation then hosted a training, a two-day training and a CLE conference in March, which we hope many of you are able to participate in and benefit from, and we can be certain that the materials that were provided as part of that can be available more broadly as well. The task force has been constituted and announced, and now we are gathering you all today to get started on the next steps. The deadline for submission from NGOs on the list of issues that Patrick was talking about is December 28th of 2012. And as the network moves forward, the task force is particularly interested in trying to facilitate coordination of the submission of list of issues, as Patrick highlighted, particularly given the breadth of issues, the scope of issues, and just the sheer size of the advocacy movement within the United States. Coordination both strengthens our own advocacy but also facilitates the work of the Human Rights Committee and does make it easier for the Human Rights Committee to carry out its tasks in putting together its list of issues and the follow-up work. And we do want to make sure that issues are fairly represented and that we also are responding to the prior concluding observations and recommendations that have come out of past review processes, as well as highlighting some of the issues that are either in the U.S. government report that are incomplete or those issues that are not addressed at all, and some of those issues that we feel need further attention. And so we will be working with you all and asking you all to please share with us an interest in coordinating a submission on particular issues and advising us as to what are the issues that you are particularly interested in so that we can be sure to match people in this coordinating effort. Following that, in March of 2013, as Patrick mentioned again, the Human Rights Committee will meet in Geneva. Unfortunately, we were hoping this would be in New York, but in Geneva to adopt that list of issues. And from there, we will begin the coordination of the ultimate shadow reporting process, and we'll hold subsequent meetings on that. But the shadow reports are the more lengthy, in-depth reports that I think many of you are more familiar with. And that effort will be done starting next spring, moving through into the summer, as we get ready for the actual review on October of 2013, which will also be held in Geneva. I had two mantras from the Universal Periodic Review process that I think carry over to this that I just want to repeat, and then we want to open it up and allow time for questions. And Jamil Dakwar from the ACLU Human Rights Project, who's the co-chair of the ICCPR task force, is going to facilitate the fielding of those questions and responding to some of those, because I unfortunately have to get off. But those two mantras are at every phase of the process. I used to say, and now our work really begins. Human rights advocacy certainly has its phases. We have these moments. We have deadlines that we need to respond to. But until we achieve full realization of human rights for all persons within the United States, our work is clearly never done. My second mantra has been that Geneva is not Vegas, and what happens in Geneva must not stay in Geneva, but that is really incumbent upon all of us to engage in this process and look not only towards how we can weigh in at what's happening in Geneva, but also for the opportunities here in the United States to promote the rights contained within the ICCPR and full compliance with those rights. Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah. And I really love those mantras. Geneva is indeed not Vegas. And as Sarah said, that Jamil is on the line to answer your questions, as well as Natasha Benna, who is a legal fellow at the Center for Reproductive Rights. As part of the International Women's Human Rights Clinic, Natasha co-authored a shadow report on the Human Rights Committee, to the Human Rights Committee on violence against women in Guatemala. And the timeline that has been mentioned is currently up, so you should be able to see it. I don't see any questions on the stack, but again, if you do have questions, use star 1 to raise your hand, and we'll recognize you to ask your question. Natasha and Jamil, do you have anything to? So, okay, someone wrote in to the chat to ask if there's a state report mailing list. Jamil, do we have such a list?
State report mailing list, meaning for different states or United States government mailing list, or what's I mean, it's not clear to me what's that question about.
Yeah, it's not clear as well, and we're going to ask the person to clarify. Jasper, could you clarify your question for Jamil, please? Jasper? So it's not clear. The question was just specifically about whether there's a state report mailing list. I know that we have an ICCPR list. Maybe you could talk a little bit about that.
Sure. We have, as part of the ICCPR task force, created a special listserv that's a protected listserv, and it's only designed to share information and to post any relevant information reporting, especially as we move closer to the review process. The U.S. Human Rights Network ICCPR webpage should have information how to get on this listserv. We encourage you to join the listserv. It's not a high-traffic listserv. I know people get a lot of emails every day, so we are trying to monitor and screen the emails that are only relevant to the ICCPR review process. But I also wanted to just remind folks that are, especially who are joining this now, and we have not had a chance to receive emails from the ICCPR task force, that we are interested to hear from you and from your organizations regarding the planning of your engagement in this process? What are the specific areas and issues that will be of interest to your organizations? We are trying to connect different organizations that have interest in doing shadow reports and even the initial submissions that are due in December to the Human Rights Committee. So it will be important to hear from you regarding what areas that you will be interested in engaging, providing information, even if you don't have the capacity within your organization to do a full shadow report. It will be important to know and join other working groups that will be created in different areas that will be covered as part of this process.
And thank you, Jamil. We also have on the line our executive director, HM DK, who is available to take questions related to how we are planning to connect all these processes. So we currently have five questions, and the first is from Eric Tars. Eric, could you ask your question,
please? Eric Tars at the National Law Center on Homelessness and Poverty. Two questions. One, I just wanted to confirm that the March session is taking place in Geneva and ask if we have an approximate date range when the U.S. list would be considered within that. And then second, given the kind of increased importance of the list of issues, does it make sense to make our initial submissions to the committee or to the secretariat in December closer to an expanded shadow report, or does it make sense to keep that very focused as we kind of did with the last round?
Is this question to Patrick or to the task force? Or?
Either.
Patrick, do you want to answer the first part or maybe also the second part from your perspective?
Yes, sure. Thank you for the question. It's a very important one, actually, because it's really important to keep in mind that during the March session, there will be only the adoption of the list of issues, so there is no formal hearing. There will be no dialogue with the state delegation. It's just a formal meeting in a closed session where the committee will adopt the list of issues. But there is no way for the delegation, but also for the NGOs to actually interact, at least formally, with regard to the adoption of the list of issues. What we could do, and what we usually organize, is some informal briefing. It could be also done by video conference with the member a few days before the adoption of the list of issues to make sure that the key issues are really taken into account by the committee. But that's the only way to interact with the committee. And it's confirmed so far that this March session will be held in Geneva. With regard to the timeline, I think you're right. It's good if you could address either a brief outline or some already document with regard to the list of issues during the month of December, then it would facilitate the work of the Secretariat. You don't need really to draft something on purpose, at least at this stage, for the committee. It's also very important to also maybe share with the committee some of the research you did already, with maybe one cover page to highlight the key issues and forward this to the Secretariat. It's a good approach to make sure that the Secretariat is also familiar with the issues you would like to raise, and they may read that during the months of December. Also, just a very few small points, keeping in mind that there is a kind of reduction of the staff in the OHHR, and now the Secretariat is really under pressure, and they have to deal with many countries. So at the same time, it's not always easy for them to devote all the attention on specific countries. So it's also important to really make sure they have in very few minutes or clearly and quickly the key issues you would like to raise in the list of issues. Thank you.
I'd just like to add to Patrick's comment that we have a sample report on the ICCPR resource page online
So that would be a good example, too, of sort of how to format your report. And I see the time here that we are at 12:57, and there are four questions on the stack. We can continue if folks have the time to stay on. And if you have written into the chat to ask a question, we ask that you use the star one feature to raise your hand and be recognized on the stack, because it's kind of difficult to keep track of the questions, the chat, and navigating back and forth. Our next question is from Andrea Smith. Andrea, go ahead.
Just how do we specifically get the information to people? I mean, if it's recorded, who do we actually contact specifically?
Jamil, do you want to take that one?
You mean contact, getting the information to the ICCPR task force or the Human Rights Committee specifically?
The Human Rights Committee. You said we were supposed to contact somebody so we could coordinate our suggestions. Who do we actually email?
Yes. Well, there is first at the U.S. Human Rights Network, we have, and we are very grateful to the work and terrific effort by the network staff, including Yolanda, who's running this call, but also Candace Kaufman, who's been very helpful in coordinating and helping the task force. So you can email her to her email address, which is Candace, C-A-N-D-A-C-E, at ushumanrightsnetwork.org. You can also email me or Sarah Poletti as well. In terms of contacting the Human Rights Committee, there is also contact information of the Human Rights Committee Secretariat. I believe they are online. We are obviously encouraging folks to be in touch to let us know if they are submitting any information to the committee. We are hoping to try to coordinate as much as possible the submission of information to the committee, but of course you are free to be in touch with the Human Rights Committee directly. I don't have the email address in front of me here of the Human Rights Committee. Maybe Patrick, what is the most effective way and best way for the committee to receive information, given that you don't want information to be lost in a high volume of emails? Would you encourage a more coordinated submissions to the committee? Like through the U.S. Human Rights Network, from your experience?
Thank you for the question. I think it's, of course, everyone is free to contact directly the committee. But as you said, especially due to the high number of NGOs involved in the process, I would suggest that it's good if there is one entry point in the coalition, and this entry point could then forward the information to the secretariat. But again, That's the theory, and in practice, I guess some will contact the secretariat. But I really suggest you try to coordinate amongst you. Just to let you know that the secretary of the committee is Kate Fox, so K-A-T-E, and the family name is Fox, F-O-X. And the email address is kfox@ohchr.org. kfox@ohchr.org. If you can also send us, put us in copy, the Center for Civil and Political Rights. So it's info@ccprcenter.org to make sure that we have the track of all the documents, because we have also a web page with all the information that will be put online, specifically on the USA, to make sure that your contribution is well taken into account. And you can send an email, but the committee, if you would like to see your contribution in the files of the committee members, should also be sent in hard copies, 25 hard copies. And also at this stage, we can print the report for you in Geneva against a small charge of fees. Thank you.
So it's 1 o'clock, and there are two more questions in the stack, which we'll take at the same time, and then we'll wrap up. But just to sort of follow up on Jamil and Patrick's point,
I will compile this list of contact information and also place that on our ICC's PR resource page, just in case you didn't get the information. So Joanne and Sue, could you ask your questions?
Sure. This is Joanne Ward. My question follows on Eric's question about what to submit regarding the list of issues. I guess the question is, if the list of issues is 25 issues and yours is not mentioned, what is the utility of a shadow report and how might we still be able to plug in case?
Patrick, do you want to take this one?
Yeah, sure. I think first the list of issues once it's adopted by the committee is not a closed list of topics. So there are always a room, and especially if you don't see your issues in the list of issues, to attract the attention of the committee during the review or before the review through written contributions. So that's the first thing. It's not a closed list, and of course, if your issue is not mentioned, you need to really inform the committee on that. That's one. And then second, the shadow report. I don't know exactly how far you what do you understand by shadow report. If it's a very important shadow report that review all the different provisions and a long report addressing the issues, by provisions covering all the challenge and difficulties, I think this, to my view, is more important to be submitted before the list of issues than during the review. Because again, this would also have an important impact on the questions. I would say that once the questions are adopted, almost all the lobby work for the NGOs, at least to make sure that your issues on the agenda, is almost done. And then once you have this list of issues, it's really important to focus on those issues, except, as I said, if your point is not really taken into account. And I think that's one of the main challenge for the coalition, how you will make sure that all the NGOs are happy with the list of issues, keeping in mind that there are only 25 to 30 questions that could be adopted. So it's really a kind of strategy that you have also to develop at this stage already. Thank you.
So we have one question. I think this is Sue's question from the chat, and she asks, what are the potential ways that folks can get involved? Is there space for law school clinics to get involved? If so, in what way?
Shall I also reply to this one, if I may? Yes, the question is yes. In fact, everyone can contribute to the committee. Even if you are not an NGO, even if you are not an organization, you could actually contribute. And we have already some U.S. law schools which are very active, not only in the U.S., but on some other countries. I think the Minnesota University is very active on the small arms survey on small arm issues. And they provide information to the committee. So yes, and they are very welcome, especially if they have a specific area of expertise that NGOs may not have. So you are welcome to contribute.
And the last question is regarding format, if there's a standard way in which reports should be submitted.
And the reply is no. There is no official request at this stage. Well, there are some best practice, and the model of the report I sent from our colleague from Australia is a very good model. But you are free to even send one page. You are not obliged to send a full report. You can really have a very thematic report of two pages on specific issues and send that to the committee. So there is no specific format. You just need to send that by email and 25 hard copies.
Well, thank you, Patrick.
You're welcome.
Yolanda, this is Natasha. Can I mention one thing?
Sure, go ahead.
I just want to mention for those that are on the call that may not have gone through this process before, while obviously the desired outcome is to have concluding observations that you can work with and that get implemented, throughout the whole process, there's a lot of advocacy opportunities in using your submissions for the list of issues or a full shadow report that you can use in your own domestic advocacy. I know there's a media awareness slide that Patrick mentioned, but the ability to kind of influence your own constituencies and decision makers locally by using your submissions can be a really powerful tool, and not just waiting for kind of the ultimate concluding observations.
Thank you. And we'll take one last question or comment from HM. Go ahead, HM.
Yeah, hi. I actually wanted to this is HM DK from the U.S. Human Rights Network. I wanted to respond to, I think, Sue's question about the involvement of law clinics as well, and to say that the ICCPR task force is really an all-volunteer task force for members and partners, and we're very, very grateful to the members and to the co-chairs, Sarah and Jamil, for all the work they've been doing to move the process along. Having said that, I think that there are many groups that could use the assistance of law clinics to draft a shadow report. So please, if your students or if you know of other students that are interested in helping out with the shadow report, I think it would be very helpful to partner with groups working on a specific issue to do that and to see if we could use that to assist particularly the smaller organizations out there who are interested in submitting reports.
So thank you. Jamil, do you have anything final to say as we begin to wrap up?
No, I would just like to thank you, Yolanda, for all your work on this, and to obviously thank Patrick for this terrific presentation, and we definitely look forward as a task force to hear from you and working with other members to engage as many people in this process.
Yes, and I would just to wrap up, I would like to join you in thanking Patrick Mutzenberg for this wonderful presentation. His presentation is available on our resource page, and this webinar is taped and will be circulated for you to use as a resource as well. Thank you, Jamil and Sarah, Natasha, for answering the questions today, and specifically Sarah and Jamil and the rest of the task force members who are on the call and who weren't able to join today, for the invaluable work that you continue to do coordinating this process. Again, the resources are available online, and this will be webinar will be circulated.
Thank you to all of you as well. I'm very impressed by your coordination work, and I'm really happy to continue to be in touch with you, and you can call me, write me anytime, or I'm happy to participate to any of those meetings by email or Skype or on video conference. And I'm really impressed by your work, all of you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And for anyone still on the call, we invite you to join the network's membership, and you can find out more about the network at www.ushrnetwork.org. And thank you for joining us today.